tonight. Jan called me and said that they had a good time, and they had a one-time CEF club at a Girl Scouts in Wheatfield. Robin, did you go? So she said that she thought 8 girls got saved. I mean, for our little club we had at KV, we had the first night 2, then 3, then 2, then 1, 1, and 1. But that one's mom opened up Girl Scouts for us. And so she was really excited about that, and that's a real blessing. Okay, Isaiah 54 makes no sense at all if you don't understand dispensations. And it's a toughie. Okay, if you understand the dispensations and the time periods in the Bible, it makes perfect sense. Okay, let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us to understand your word. Help us to approach your word with an honest heart, sincere desire to know the truth, even if it really doesn't seem to affect us personally this day, where we might just believe what you want us to believe, to understand something that is about the future that somebody talked about 2,700 years ago. And Lord, I ask you to help us to understand these words. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Isaiah 54. Most that approach the Bible, be they good, be they bad, approach the Bible from a devotional viewpoint. They approach it looking for something that's going to help me out today. Okay, that's how they approach it. Okay, they seldom, if all, and I'm including the fundamental Baptists, they basically approach the Bible to motivate people to do something for the Lord. And if they're Baptist or Baptistic, they try to make all of the Bible fit in their Baptistic doctrine. Okay, which you can't do. So if when you approach the Bible doctrinally, it makes a lot more sense when you understand the dispensations of the Bible, where God deals with different people at different time periods in different ways. And we recognize this fact. The Bible makes a lot more sense. You can understand why it's a very confusing book to most. It's because they don't understand how to rightly divide the word of truth. When you understand Bible technique of how to rightly divide the word of truth, then the Bible makes perfect sense. You never have to add a word, never have to subtract a word, don't have to change anything, don't have to run the Greek, don't have to run the Hebrew. None of that. You can go right through with the English and the King James Bible. Okay, don't need a college education, don't need a scholar, don't need a professor. Don't need anybody but the Spirit of God. So, I don't know about you, but that's a great encouragement. That's a blessing to be able to do that. Take this book and just believe what it says. Isaiah 54, verse 1. Sing, O barren, thou that didst not bear. Break forth into singing and cry aloud, thou that didst not travail with child. For more are the children of the desolate than the children of the married wife, saith the Lord. What are you talking about, pal? Did you come out of a nut house or something? A woman that wants to have a child, and you're telling her to sing and be happy you don't have kids? That's what it said, is it not? Is that not what that said? That's what it said. You know, try to tell that to some married couple that have been married, you know, for 20 years and have been wanting to have children, gone through all sorts of stuff trying to get children. Make that their life verse. You know, and try to make sense of that. That absolutely makes no sense unless you keep reading. And then when you read the Bible, you ask the author of the Bible, explain that to me. Please help me to understand that. Okay, so verse 1, he is telling a lady who has never given birth, He is telling her that you are better off not giving birth because you're going to have children. Okay, but not at this present time. Verse 2, he says, enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them stretch forth the curtains of thine habitations. Spare not, lengthen thy cords, and strengthen thy stakes. Oh, that really helps, don't it?
Go buy a big tent.
You know, make a big one, because you're going to have to fill it. Verse 3, for thou shalt, future tense, shalt break forth on the right hand, on the left, and thy seed. Oh, so this barren of verse 1 is going to have a seed. Thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. Now, I'll bet you anything, when Isaiah is writing that down, he said, what is this about? A lot of those prophets did have to scratch their head when they were writing. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 11 and 12 says that they didn't understand some of those things. And if he had to publicly declare that, I'll bet you he was, you know, people, you okay, Isaiah? You know, it must be a, well, we'd say a Monday morning, you're having a bad day. They'd have to say a Sunday morning because the Sabbath was on a Saturday. You know, something like that. I mean, are you okay, pal? Desolate cities, okay, desolate cities. Historically, this is about 10 years after Assyria did conquer Israel. But thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles? Verse 4, fear not, for thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be thou confounded, for thou shalt not be put to shame, for thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and shalt not remember the reproach of thy widowhood any more. Oh, now her husband's dead. So he's telling a woman who has never had children, whose husband is dead, that you're going to have a bunch of kids. Now this really makes a lot of sense. Verse 5, for thy maker is thine husband. Thy maker, capital uppercase M, obviously God, under the Old Testament, the Lord, not knowing him as God the Father, but knowing him as one Lord. Thy maker is thine husband, the Lord of hosts is his name, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, the God of the whole earth shall he be called. Oh, now we're getting a pretty good clue there with that statement. The God of the whole earth shall he be called. So when you keep reading, things will begin to make sense. When is there a time period when the Holy One of Israel, who is the Redeemer and the Maker and the Husband, and is going to be the God over all the earth, and people will actually see God? Verse 6, for the Lord hath called thee as a woman forsaken. Okay, and grieved in spirit, and a wife of youth when thou wast refused, saith thy God. For a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with great mercies will I gather thee. In a little wrath I hid my face from thee for a moment, but with everlasting kindness will I have mercy on thee, saith the Lord thy Redeemer. Okay, now when we get up to that far, hopefully you recognize some hints in here, very strong hints, of that the time period he is talking about, and I thought I heard somebody say it, the millennium. Okay, so what would be the moment? A small moment. Under the wrath of God. Tribulation. Okay, the tribulation time period. In a little wrath, the wrath of God. It's called a small moment. They say 7 years, that's a small moment. Yes, dealing with 7,000 years. Yes, dealing with eternity, most certainly. Okay, so now we can kind of get the picture. If we go back and look at this, Israel is the one who is barren. Israel is married to God, verse 5. Okay, and if it's dealing with individuals, but if it's dealing with a nation, okay, the nation of Israel is going to give birth to a man-child, Isaiah 66, verse 7. And the nation of Israel will get born again, as the earth will get born again in the millennium. And then the Israel that comes back or is restored, the people that die in the tribulation are resurrected. Okay, the men that are killed, Isaiah 4 mentions that there's going to be seven women to one man. The men that are killed are resurrected. Okay, and then they will live out a long life in a millennial time period. And their wife, who was barren, why does he say, rejoice, be glad that you're not barren? Matthew 23, verse 24, verse 17, 18, 19 says, woe unto them that are with child and give suck in those days. So they'll be glad that they don't have a child where they can run at the drop of a hat. Run anytime, real quick. And then during the millennial time period, they will have children. And the desolate of verse 3 will be the cities of Israel will be desolate, but they will be repopulated. The Gentiles will come in and trod them down underfoot, Revelation chapter 11. So when you understand all those things, it makes perfect sense. But until you get that, it makes no sense at all. The small moment. Now there's something for the small moment that we could apply spiritually for us in the New Testament. Romans chapter 8. As far as suffering goes for our life here on earth, no matter how long it is, it's but for a short time compared to eternity. Romans chapter 8, verse 18 for us. For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. Okay, this idea of singing, the barren singing, you could go with James 1 verse 2 where it says that, he says to my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing that the trying of your faith worketh patience, but let patience have a perfect work that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. When you understand the doctrine of James, James 1 verse 1, to the 12 tribes which are scattered, God is telling the Jews in the tribulation who are running for their lives, count that joy. Boy, that's different. And who are we if the air conditioner goes out or we get a flat tire or something like that? He is telling people who, when they get caught, will be killed, martyred, eaten, in a religious ceremony, and he tells them, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations. Now, Paul said that he rejoiced in his iniquity, in his infirmities. He gloried in his infirmities. Okay, there's something in verse 7 that we could apply spiritually, where our troubles are but a moment compared to eternity. But in this case, he's saying, for a small moment have I forsaken thee. This is a forsaking of the nation of Israel. Why? Because verse 8, they're under the wrath of God. Why are they under the wrath of God? Matthew 27, 25, they said, let his blood be upon us and our children. And the tribulation time period, the 7 years there, is called Jacob's trouble. It's but for a moment, but he says, but with everlasting kindness will I have mercy on thee. That's the new covenant, Hebrews chapter 8, where they are restored. Okay, and then they will inherit the earth. That's verse 3. Thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles. Who inherits the earth? The meek inherit the earth. Okay, that's the Sermon of the Mount, where Jesus said, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. The Sermon on the Mount is a constitution for the millennial kingdom. Okay, now, I think pretty much got those. Oh, the idea of hiding my face of verse 8. In little wrath I hid my face. That is mentioned multiple times in the Bible, starting in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy, I think I have 31:17. Yes, at 31:17, well, I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them there. And in Deuteronomy 31:17, there's a few more. Isaiah 59:1-2 is another one. The idea there is that God hides His face from Israel during the tribulation time period. They will not get their prayers answered. At that time, per se, individually, they will get their prayers answered as a nation at the end of the tribulation. Okay? And in Proverbs 1, he even says that he will laugh at their derision. That's a different side of God. They've mocked, Israel has mocked God for so many years. American Christianity, you know, they have this infatuation with the nation of Israel, but they fail to remember that the nation of Israel today is apostate. The Star of David is two pyramids. That's a satanic symbol. Okay, and we understand that. Now, we don't want to take it to extreme where the British Israelites take it to extreme where they become anti-Semites. No, we realize that the apostate Jews of the banking cartel and the movie industry and all that, we understand those people are going to go to hell just like any lost sinner. The Jews that will accept their Messiah in the tribulation, the Jewish remnant, they are the ones who will inherit the Abrahamic blessing. And we're not concerned about a covenant because we're in the family. Okay, now verse 8. He says, "For this is as the waters of Noah unto me." Now, why would he mention Noah? Remember Matthew 24, verse 4, all the way down to probably most of the end of the chapter, where he is talking about the Great Tribulation, Matthew 24, 21. He calls it the Tribulation. And in verse 36 and 37, he says, "As it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man." So when you read Genesis 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, we are reading history, but we're also reading future prophecy. What do we read back in Genesis 6? Fallen angels, getting flesh, getting blood, losing their first estate, cohabiting with women, having giants as children. Okay, this is what's all, this is technically what's behind this, all this, you know, infatuation with aliens and all these things where they're looking for a favored race. People may be surprised that many, that Joseph, was it Mengel of World War II? This guy was trying to cross the races between the humans and the aliens to try to get some superhuman being, and it's interesting that many of these Nazi nutcases after the war, America wanted that information, in fact, hid a bunch of those guys, as they did Japan with the rape of Nanking. You know, and, you know, people don't realize, Americans don't realize that the upper echelon, man, these people are demonic and satanic. Okay, and so, as it was in the days of Noah, so Genesis 6, where super being from outer space or whatnot, you know, or claimed to be, is going to be a savior of the world, Genesis 6. Genesis 11, Nimrod was a guy that had world domination, and he was building like a ziggurat or a pyramid that may reach unto heavens. Nimrod was Hamite, the 13th from Adam. And so the Antichrist is going to be able to try to so-called unite the races and the Jews and the Arabs and all this stuff. Okay, and that's all Genesis 11. So we know the future by studying the past. Ecclesiastes 1 verse 9 says, "That which hath been is that which shall be." Okay, so that's how we know the future by studying the past. Plus we know the future by reading our Bible. "For this is as the waters of Noah unto me, for as I have sworn that the waters of Noah should no more go over the earth." This is over the entire earth. The entire earth was flooded. If it was a local flood, then God lied to us. Because there's been floods a lot of places. It's a worldwide flood. These waters are what actually created the Grand Canyon. Because the Grand Canyon, that Colorado River that runs through there, there's a point where the plateau is higher And so that water had to go upstream unless there was a bunch of water that then cut it out. But then where's the delta of the Grand Canyon? There should be a delta if it was formed through millions of years. There's a fellow a few years back that studying the erosion of Niagara Falls, hoping to try to prove that the earth was millions of years old. And he'd figured, well, Niagara Falls probably erodes, you know, maybe a half a foot a year. And so he kind of calculated that, and it wasn't getting the earth old enough. Then he discovered that Niagara Falls is eroding 5 feet per year from scientific observation, which makes the earth maximum 10,000 years old, if you just go by that. You talk about something that's really throwing a chink in the, you know, a monkey wrench in the system. You know, and this is the interesting thing about that sheriff down in Arizona, that guy that studied Obama's birth certificate, is that he says they originally was trying to prove that it was authentic. And then he come out and said it can't be authentic. And then recently I came across where Obama's Social Security number is a Social Security number of a dead man in Kentucky. I mean, in Connecticut. Where this guy immigrated from Europe, came to Connecticut, lived most of his life in Connecticut, went down to Hawaii, died in Hawaii, never got any Social Security benefits. And so Obama's grandmother worked in a probate office. So this guy never got any benefits, so nobody wouldn't challenge it, and then assigned this number to Barack. Okay, and then there's a guy now just come out this past week that was the postman that delivered the mail to Bill Ayers' house in Chicago. Bill Ayers, what was his wife's name? Mary? Anybody remember her name? Bill Ayers, and I thought hers was Mary. But either she was talking to this postman on several occasions about how they're excited about this foreign student that they're help paying their way through school, and he was a, you know, black kid that they're helping out, they're real excited about, and it turned out to be Barack Obama. And this guy signed an affidavit that he heard her say on several occasions that he was born in Indonesia. Is it going to stop anything? I ain't holding my breath. These guys are just so arrogant, they're just going to rub it right in our face, no matter what you and I think. And it doesn't matter. But even at that, okay, all this stuff is going on and on and on. Okay, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. So he says, for as I have sworn that the waters of Noah should no more go over the earth, so have I sworn that I would not be wroth with thee, nor rebuke thee, Israel. For the mountains shall depart and the hills be removed, but my kindness shall not depart from thee. Okay, the mountains shall depart and the hills shall be removed. Heaven and earth shall pass away. But then he said, but my kindness shall not depart from thee, neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed, saith the Lord that hath mercy on thee. Okay, obviously this is nation of Israel. Covenant. New covenant. New covenant we read about in Hebrews 8. That's God's promise to Israel. Okay, we have a paragraph mark, verse 11. O thou afflicted, tossed with the tempest, and not comforted. Again, context, Israel, tribulation. Behold, I will lay thy stones with fair colors and lay thy foundations with sapphires. Does that verse ring a bell with anybody? About a city that's got 12 gates? We can run that right into Revelation 21 and 22. Promise of the new heaven and new earth. Now here Isaiah is prophesying about this 3,000, at least 3,700 years before its time. Lay thy foundation with sapphires, and I will make thy windows of agates, and thy gates of carbuncles, and thy borders of pleasant stones. And all thy children shall be taught of the Lord. Now, everything's starting to make sense, does it not? The more you read this, the more you, oh yeah, oh man, I see that, oh yeah, that's it. They're taught of the Lord. That's Isaiah 2, where the Lord is in Jerusalem. and he's going to teach his law. That's Hosea 4 verse 1, I think it is. No, Micah. Micah 4 verse 1. Make sure, Jonah, Nahum, Micah 4 verse 1 and 2. Okay, that's the Lord teaching there. That's also Zechariah, I think it is 13:3, where he's teaching. And he will be in Jerusalem. That's Matthew 5, verse 31, 32. Maybe a little later. Okay, and thy children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of thy children. The peace of his children, worldwide peace. That's Isaiah 2, 4. That's when they will beat their swords into plowshares. Okay, that's the promise of the worldwide peace. It would only take place when the king of Jerusalem or the king of Salem. Hebrews 7 verse 1 comes in, the king of peace. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem, Luke 2:14. Okay, Psalm 122 also, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And great shall be the peace of thy children. In righteousness shalt thou be established. In righteousness. Okay, I think that's Jeremiah 23, 5 and 6 where he says, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I'll raise unto David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. In his days Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely. And this is his name, whereby he shall be called the Lord our righteousness. So everything fits perfectly when we understand the dispensations here. In righteousness shalt thou be established. Thou shalt be far from oppression. What oppression? Oppression of the tribulation. No more running. For thou shalt not fear, and from terror. Ah, is it a coincidence that terrorism is a popular word now? Terrorism. 1 Peter chapter 3, 14, I think it is, where it says, be not afraid of their terror. And that word terror, now I don't have any cross references there. That's an interesting word to run, because that's what Satan does to people. He terrorizes them. Thou shalt not fear and from terror. I think Matthew 24 even mentions that one. Matthew 24, 6. Ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Okay, I don't see terror in Matthew 24. I see trouble, though. Psalm 91, that's a great one. That's the Psalm of Protection. What verse do you have, Mike? Yep, there it is. This is a great one. This psalm is about a psalm of protection. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Doctrinally, that's Petra. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in Him will I trust. Surely He shall deliver me from the snare of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. Okay, pestilence that we see in the plagues. And then 5, thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, nor for the arrow that flieth by day. 7, 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand. Psalm of protection. So the word terror is an interesting word to find throughout the Bible. You find it multiple places. And it's no coincidence that is now a word for war. You know, it's a tactic. It's a military tactic. We declared a war on a tactic. Okay? You're a terrorist if you're Christian, you're doing something, that believes in the second coming, you're a terrorist. If you ask a police officer questions, you're a terrorist. If you're Muslim and blow somebody up, well, you're just a radical.
right-wing extremist. Whatever. Okay, for thou shalt not fear and from terror, for it shall not come near thee. Behold, they shall surely gather together. That's they. They shall surely... This where it kind of turns a little strange. Behold, they shall gather together. They. But not by me. Okay, so it's not Israel. They shall surely gather together, but not by me. Whosoever shall gather together against thee. So this is a coalition of forces getting together, or Muslims getting together. Whosoever shall gather together against thee, Israel, shall fall for thy sake. Behold, I have created the smith that bloweth the coals in the fire, and that bringeth forth an instrument for his work, and I have created the waster to destroy. Okay, the smith that bloweth the coals in a fire seems rather strange, but when you read the rest of the verse, the waster. The waster, in this case, doctrinally, I take it to Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, because it is a, it's a picture or a reference to Satan or the Antichrist. What's he going to do? He's going to destroy. He's called Apollyon in Revelation 9. The destroyer. He's a king over the children. He's a king over hell, Revelation 9. And he comes to destroy. You know, people that destroy stuff, it just don't make sense to me. Okay, it takes a brain to create something. It doesn't take a brain to throw a rock through a window to destroy it. One sinner destroyeth much good. But that's what the devil does. He's just come to destroy things. It makes no sense for somebody who's like a socialist who comes in. If you look at Africa, you'll look to see African nations that have good leadership. Now, when I say good leadership, you know, you want to call this racist all you want. Well, usually when it's white leadership, they'll take care of that nation. And then they scream about apartheid, apartheid, apartheid. And then the blacks will come in and take over and ruin it. It's interesting. Somebody sent me a picture of Nagasaki after the bomb. Okay, and then a picture of Nagasaki today. You would think nothing. I mean, built unbelievably, all the modern technology. And then they show a picture of Detroit, Michigan. Houses broke down, busted down all over the place. Go to East St. Louis. Go to Gary. I mean, just look at it. That's just a natural thing of the Bible. You see that in the Bible. People say that's racist. No, that's to read the Bible. Look at history. You know, it took a white man, David Livingston, a missionary, to explore Africa. And you'll find all the explorers throughout history is always white. People say white supremacist. No, I'm a brown supremacist. I believe Jesus should be running the show. Okay, and that's how it should be. And he's of the Oriental race. Okay, I have created the waster to destroy. That's Satan's role. Okay, he's a deceiver, Revelation 12, and then an accuser. Verse 17, no weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper. Okay, thee, Israel, and every tongue that shall rise against thee in judgment, thou shalt condemn. Okay, this doctrinally, Obadiah 17 to 21, Israel turns into flame. And the Edomites turn into stubble, and they're going to torch them. 17. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their righteousness is with me, saith the Lord. Okay, that's the promise. See, there's a chapter that if you try to teach that spiritually, boy, that'd be a tough one. That'd be a hard one. Okay, you have to look at it doctrinally. When you look at it doctrinally, it makes sense. If you don't look at it doctrinally, boy, it's rather confusing. And that's why you can travel the country around and probably go to churches, you know, 10,000 churches, you'll never hear them preach Isaiah 54. You never hear a message from that. You can't motivate anybody with that. You got to run them other places. Now, they might hit it verse by verse, but not too many do that. Okay, we'll stop there. 54. Any questions or comments what we covered? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah,